Okay, Boker Tov, I think we can start it. Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov, and Shana Tova, I guess we can already start. And always good to wish people a Shana Tova. Welcome to Class 92 in our ongoing series on the Siddur. Last week we basically did Vavta Tshem HaKecha B'chol Levavcha B'chol Nafshecha B'chol Modecha, various interpretations. First of all, it's not so simple to explain what that means. We discussed what it means, Afilu No Telech Nafshecha, and is that how practical is that, and then only twice once, and we saw that that was just Rabbi Akiva's opinion. There are other opinions, Brit Milah, etc. Not exactly how you translate it, and with Armani Modecha, but so even though we say it every day, and it sounds very simple, we should love God with all our heart, all our soul, and all our might. What exactly that means in practice is not, or it means various things. It's not 100% clear or simple, and of course, it's not simple to do. It's very hard to do, to truly love God with all our heart, with all our soul. It's very hard to love anybody is hard. And we've discussed, mentioned many times that the hardest mitzvot are those that are, you know, are subjective to love, not to be jealous, not to hate somebody in your heart. These are the hard mitzvot. Action, mitzvot are much easier because you do the action. Of course, the action should induce some kind of a feeling, but mitzvot to be happy, these type of mitzvot are always much harder to observe. Okay, but as we discussed last week, I just want to mention there's, you know, every once in a while somebody gives a comment. I don't say it's like a deflating comment. You know, you're discussing these beautiful ideas. You have to love God with all our heart. I don't know if I mentioned last week that one of the commentators said modecha just means ma'od ma'od. And not the all your money. Those are all extra levels of interpretation, additional layers of interpretation. But what me'odecha means, ma'od. You have to love God a lot. That's b'chol, it's repetitive. B'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, and then love God a lot with everything you have. But, so we're talking about these beautiful things. So, in the Otzer HaTfilot, one of the classic commentaries on the Siddur quotes there an idea that's, what can I say? You know, it's, he says like this, that this mitzvah, it only means, it's only talking about the negative mitzvah of the Torah. That you have to love God with all you got. That's only with the negative mitzvah. Cause it's not true by the positive mitzvah. Cause we have a halacha that one only has to spend 1/5 of one mitzvah, 1/5 of one's income, to do a mitzvah. Let's say you don't have a lulav. And you're on welfare. You can't afford a lulav. You scrape by whatever you have every month. So I don't know exactly 1/5 of income, 1/5 of savings. How you calculate that in the modern time, I'm not exactly sure. But there is a halacha. You don't have to spend exorbitant sums of money to do a positive mitzvah. So you can't afford tefillin. I'm serious. Tefillin's $1,000. So somebody on welfare, whatever, somebody's very... Oh, it can really, really is exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. So I don't know. I guess we are so wealthy, even the poor are wealthy. I don't know what to say, but, I mean, hopefully that would not happen. Hopefully the community would, support, but one doesn't have to, spend one's last penny to do a mitzvah. Matter of fact, one is not allowed to. It's not just, you don't have to spend more than 20%. I'm not allowed to spend more than 20% to do a mitzvah. As the sages say, HaTorah chasa al mamonam shel Yisrael. The Torah has pity, has mercy on the money of the Jewish people. By negative mitzvot, then you have to spend everything. If somebody, kosher, you can't eat non-kosher food because, kosher food is 8 times as expensive. Or, you're not allowed to buy, you can't buy, you know, the old joke that the guy finds $1 million, like on, you know, walking home from shul on Shabbos, right? Everybody know that joke? Put up your hand if you know the joke. If you don't know the joke, I have to say quickly, Tova, you know that joke? You don't know everybody. No, you don't know the joke. It's a great joke. The priest and the Muslim, the Jew and you know, yeah, everybody knows that joke that, they're in a plane and they think they're going to crash. It's all turbulence, and the priest prays and, everywhere it's all turbulent, but where the plane goes, it's nice and smooth. And then the Muslim guy says that we were on a boat and we were about to capsize and we thought we were going to drown. And then our imam prayed and everywhere was the Atlantic Ocean was crazy, but where our boat went, it was nice and straight. And the Jew says, that's nothing. I was walking home from shul once and there was $1,000 and the rabbi prayed and everywhere was a Shabbos, and where the money was a Wednesday. Okay, I'm sorry, I ruined the joke. But so that you're not allowed to do. You can't be Wednesday where the money is, because for a negative commandment, you have to spend everything. So it's sort of, you know, it's a very nice thing he says, but it kind of ruins the whole beauty. And Eri comes along and he says, that's very nice, but we're only where he puts it in a technical halachic spin, which is, I guess, may be true, but I think it takes away from the focus of now. It is true that you have to give up all your money rather than violate a negative commandment. Okay, we won't get into all these halachic details of that question. We also know, we mentioned many times, that mitzvah taseh are really more powerful than mitzvah lo taseh. In other words, we have a concept of sur mei rava aseh tov. First, you have to depart from bad, from evil, and then do good. The first thing is not to do anything bad. Then you can talk about doing good. But doing good, doing a positive mitzvah, it reflects a much higher level. Not to do something, okay, I don't do anything. But when I do something, it's much more positive. So that's, we often have quoted the halacha that a aseh doche lo taseh, a positive mitzvah overrides a negative mitzvah. In other words, they come in conflict. So the classic example of the Talmud is, if the only piece of clothing you have is made of wool, made of linen, and the tzitzis are made of wool, so is shatnes. You can't wear tzitzis, so then you can't wear the four-corner garment, because you can't wear a four-corner garment unless you put on tzitzis. So the halach is, no, the mitzvah of tzitzis asay doche lo taseh, it overrides the prohibition of kilayim. So because even though you have to be more careful in regards to not violating a negative commandment, when you actually do something positive, it's actually better. It sounds a little contradictory, but I don't think it is. It's just the idea that, yes, first don't do evil, but a mitzvah to say is much more positive. Well, one topic, I think I've asked this before, what about mitzvah ba aveira, right? I'm sure many of you have heard of the concept of mitzvah ba aveira. Where's that originally said? Where's the concept of mitzvah aveira? Where's that said in the Talmud? I'm sure.
A stolen lulav.
Yeah. I once wrote an article. Why would somebody steal a lulav? I understand somebody steals money, goes into, you know, he cheats on his taxes. I get all that. But somebody steal a lulav. Anyways, we'll leave that for another time. But the sugya, the discussion about mitzvah hababa aveira, if you steal a lulav, I violated a negative commandment to do a positive commandment. So that's you get no positive commandment. There's only a negative. God hates that. That the Gemara quotes a verse. God doesn't want that. What do you mean? I tell you not to do it. What, I can steal? So why can I wear tzitzis that are made of shatnes? Why isn't that? Isn't that a mitzvah hababa aveira? The only way I did the mitzvah of tzitzis is through the sin of wearing shatnes. How can we reconcile these two ideas? Anybody? So I learned lulav hagazul in grade 11. No, in grade 10. In grade 10, I learned lulav hagazul in grade 10. And this, nobody raised that question. We learned mitzvah b'aveira. Does it apply? A guy drives the shul on Shabbos. Is that mitzvah b'aveira? So the answer is no. It's no. It's he didn't aveira. He drove the shul. He did a mitzvah. He didn't aveira. He drove. He did a mitzvah. He drove the shul. It's not mitzvah b'aveira. Because mitzvah b'aveira means the object of the aveira becomes the mitzvah. I steal the lulav. So the lulav that I stole, I can't use for a mitzvah. Driving to shul, they're two separate activities. That's mitzvah above. It's, anyways, I don't want to get into the whole shir of mitzvah above aveira, but nobody raised this question, at least that I recall. Okay, it was only in grade 10. But how do you resolve the conflict of aseh doche lo taseh? The question is not so important. I'm raising the question because I want to discuss the answer that I think. So to me, the answer is very simple. Are we talking about mitzvah between man and man and man and God? When it comes to mitzvah between man and God, God doesn't mind if you, quote unquote, violate a negative commandment to do a positive commandment. God says, I want you to wear tzitzis. The only way to wear tzitzis is by shatnes. Okay, that's okay. I don't mind. But when it comes to human relations, I'm not allowed to do a sin in order to do, I mean, I want to take a lulav. That's very nice. You want to be religious. So very good, but I can't steal from somebody. That's all these halachas. I was just talking to my daughter who was on an archaeological dig in Israel. So they went out like at 4 in the morning. So she couldn't daven. So she davened at breakfast. So we were discussing that, you know, the Mishnah describes if you're at work, and you, so you're not allowed to daven a long Shmon Esrei. I mean, I go to Rav Schechter told this years ago. I remember that the OU, I imagine they still have this. I don't know. They had a 3 o'clock Mincha Minyan. Obviously in the winter in the OU, there's going to be a Mincha Minyan. So Rav Schechter told us that somebody complained to him that they do a Hecha Kedusha. They don't repeat the entire Shmon Esrei. They do like a quick Mincha. You're in a hurry. You know, you're at a wedding. You don't want to spend 10 minutes on Mincha. Quickly, the Chazan says still Kedusha. Everybody says San Shmon Esrei. So he complained. It's not really right. You're supposed to repeat the Shmon Esrei. And Rav Schechter said, what are you talking about? They're obligated to do a Hechik Dusha. They're taking time off work. Okay, the OU gives them the time off work, whatever. But you're not allowed to waste time on your religious needs when it comes to, you're supposed to be at work. So you want to be religious, you be religious on your own time. Don't be religious on your boss's time. And then that's a very important halakhot that people don't observe so much today. Okay, today, maybe the work environment's a little bit different. But the idea that God is very forgiving. God doesn't mind if we do a mitzvah through through the means of an avera, quote unquote, but not between Ben Adam and Chaviro. Okay, that's just an aside. You have to love God. Loving God is a positive mitzvah, but in a certain sense, it begins with the commandment to fear God and not to violate any mitzvah. Okay, let's continue.
Excuse me. Can I ask you a question?
Of
Didn't the Kohen Gadol also wear shatnez?
Yes. Yes. Of course, the avnet was made of shatnez. The belt was made of shatnez. Correct. Listen, what the Kruvim and the Beit HaMikdash is like Avodah Zarah, you know, so we have a lot. They are Mechala Shabbos, the whole concept of Shabbos. At least on a rabbinic level, obviously they're slaughtering animals on Shabbos. That's a biblical mitzvah. Then no rabbinic mitzvah. They used to blow shofar. This year, unfortunately, I don't like when Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbos. What can I tell you? No, I miss Shabbos. It's like, it's not Shabbos. I miss three Shabbosim. I don't want to kill two birds with one stone. I like Yontif and Shabbos. I like the extra day. Nunu. Other people who have to go to work, I teach in a Jewish school, so I get off anyways. But I understand people who go to work, they like it. But you know, you don't get a weekend for a whole month. You know, like it's Shabbos Sunday, back to work, so I don't like it. I miss shofar, and I miss Shabbos. But they used to blow shofar in the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbos, and that they did. So we have a lot of this stuff. The mitzvot, the Beit HaMikdash was like its own time zone, and even time started in the morning. Right, the day in the temple starts in the morning, not at night. When you bring a korban, you need it that day till the next morning. The day starting at night. That's where we all live, but that's only outside of the temple. So the temple is like its own zone, has its own rules. And that's just an interesting idea. But yes, correct. The Kohen Gadol did wear shatnez in his avodah in the Beit HaMikdash. Yeah. Anyways, okay. Right? Then we get to the second pasuk of the Shema. So this is what I would call a transitional pasuk. These things that I command you. So we say, first of all, on your heart. So you notice here, we only refer to your heart. What's the pasuk? So we don't say, again, the heart is the key motivator in doing mitzvot. In connecting ourselves to God, the most important thing is our heart. But of course, the heart is also, we're afraid of the heart. Below tatur acharei levavchem, in the third paragraph of the Shema, you're not allowed to go after the heart. And this, of course, the heart, like everything, the greater the potential, the good, greater potential for evil. But the heart is the seat of all emotion. And in Chazal also the seat, I believe, a little bit on the intellect. So vayu ad reimela. So what's the Torah telling us? I think, or I mean, no, we're going through sort of a little bit in the Chumash here, but, that how do you love God? you love God through what comes next. Vishinantan levanecha v'dibartavam v'shivtecha v'vitecha v'latcha v'derach v'shomcha u'kamecha. These things, these are the things that I command hayom al levavecha. So already, Chazal point out, and this is the challenge I think that Judaism has faced relatively unsuccessfully, I would say, in the last 250 years, and that's the challenge of making Judaism hayom. Asher anochi mitzvocha hayom. As the Chazal quote, b'chol yom yu beinecha kachadashim. They quote this in various ways, but the same idea. Every day, the Torah should be new. It's boring to keep the old Torah. But of course, right? So that's why the Torah references hayom, hayom. You have that a little bit in this week's, you know, parsha. Ela shofet asher yeh bayamim haheim. You have to go to the judge who's in that time. So the rabbis come. What do you mean? Who else are you going to go to? A dead judge? So you can't go to it's bad. Yiftach bedoro kishmuel bedoro means even if the judges of our generation are not so great, we don't have Moshe Feinstein anymore. We don't have Reb Soloveitchik. Our leaders, they are not as good as, I forget who I heard this from, but it's really true. After the Holocaust, it was, it's like Reb Soloveitchik when they asked him, why did our generation merit the state of Israel? The generation of the Vilna Gaon, the Chafetz Chaim, were more pious than our generation of 1948. So Reb Soloveitchik gave a three-word answer. We needed it. Such a beautiful answer. We needed it. After the Holocaust, the Jewish people could not have survived without a state of Israel. The Jews in the 1800s could survive without a state. After the tragedy of the Holocaust, God, we needed the state of Israel. That's why God gave it to us. No, obviously, there. I don't think Russell basically claiming he knows how God operates, but it's a beautiful answer. And in the same way, God granted the generation that's no longer great leadership. The leadership after the war were amazing. Whatever your hashkafa, and believe me, I don't agree with all, my hashkafa doesn't align with all the people I'm going to mention, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Aaron Cutler and Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Huttner, these were tremendous people who built amazing, who built Torah, the Chazon Ish, in a different way, really. So these were God, we needed it. God blessed that generation with tremendous leadership, which I think we don't have today. It's not the same. We don't have Rav Herzog as the chief rabbi of Israel. Compare Rav Herzog, compare the early chief rabbis of Israel, Rav Unterman, Rav Uziel, to the current chief rabbis. It's just that they're in a different league. And nonetheless, that often happens. People feel the judge, and so why should I listen to you? You're some nobody. I'm going to go listen to the Chatam Sofer. So no. It's only the judge who's alive today. So it's a very nice idea, but it means much more than that. It means, of course, you can't go to a dead person because the halacha has to live in the real world, and you can't quote the Chatam Sofer. I mentioned many times that's the danger. That was what the danger of writing down the oral law was. The law was meant to be oral and flexible, and we don't believe. Rav Schachter used to tell us all the time, Judaism does not believe in precedent. I mean, it's fine, but we're not like an American court. You know, they have a ruling from 35 years ago. We're stuck. That's not true. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, I'm going to disagree with people. No, we don't. But just because some rabbi, some great rabbi, the greatest rabbi, says something 100 years ago, it doesn't mean it still applies. A different rabbi today can say situation's different, or can even say, I disagree with their halachic analysis. That's totally fine. Ela shofet asher yeh bayamim haheim. So it's v'shinanta, bayud reim ele asher nochem yizkor hayom. It's today, and we have the trick, not the trick, the job of the leadership of the people, of all, Shema's for all people. That's for the leadership, the judge, and this for all people, is to make Torah relevant every day. So like I say, that's something we failed at. How do I know we failed at it? Because most Jews are not observant. Most Jews have assimilated. For the last 250 years, most people didn't find Judaism relevant for all kinds of reasons, sometimes obviously beyond our control, but sometimes within our control. The way we present Judaism, and it's very important. This is not like a modern Orthodox idea or reform idea. This is like Torah. This is Shema, you know, Neshma Yisrael, Hashem, Hayom. But every day the Torah has to be anew. So every day there has to be refreshment of Torah, applying Torah to new situations, etc. That's I would say the most important point of this verse. But how do you come to love God? So these things shall be on your heart. These things that I command you today. God didn't command us today. He commanded us 4,000 years ago. But no, every day it's like a new command. There's a new insight. There's a new way. That's why we every year you have new insights in Parshat Shavua. People know that the Talmud says Eino Dome Misha Shon Empirical Mea Pamim Lemea Vachat Pamim. It's not the same somebody who learns something 100 times and 101 times. It's always a new insight. And it's very nice, the number. You know, I could say it's not the same one who learns 50 times or 51 times, but you know, it's not the same. See, I learned it 100 times. That's like, wow, okay, 100 times, that's it, I'm finished. No, 100 times at 101. That's everything. There's always new things to learn. Okay, but the job of the Jew is to make, the job of our rabbis is to make the Torah relevant to all people and to be responsive to the needs of do. Great poskim look for ways to find it. I don't think I mentioned here last week, but maybe I did. Tell me if I did. By tzedakah, right? We spoke last week the mitzvah of tzedakah, which we mentioned is the only other time the Torah says to use our heart. You have to love God with all our heart, and then the Torah says, don't harden your heart, give tzedakah. So our heart brings us closer to God, and our heart brings us closer to man, right? So I don't know if I mentioned that. I mentioned it said in the context of Shemitah, but did I say, you know, why does the Torah say don't harden your heart by tzedakah? I mean, what's the, in the context of the Torah? What's the context of the Torah there? Why might I want to harden my heart or close my hand? There's a specific reason in the context of the Torah that I might want to close my hand and harden my heart and not give any tzedakah.
Not to lend out money before Shemitah.
Right, because of the Shemitah is coming. The Shemitah is coming, and you may not get your money back. So that shows the highest level of tzedakah, of course, is giving a loan. That I know I mentioned last week. But what did Hillel do? Hillel created a principle. I find this so beautiful. Hillel saw that Taka people didn't listen to what it said. The Torah says, "Hishamer lecha pen yelav avchaim Bilial." Be careful that your heart, again, your heart should not be with Bilial. That's like an idolatrous term. Your heart shouldn't do this terrible thing to say Karbashnat Hasheva. The seventh year is coming, and I'm never going to get my money back. That's terrible to say it. And Hillel said, "That's what Jews were doing." Hillel saw it. So it says in the Torah. Who cares? When it comes to money, they're not lending money. So what could Hillel done? He could have yelled at the people. He could have gotten them at the bima, you sinners, you terrible people. No, he said, you know what? The Jewish people are sinning. Let's find a way so they can sin without sinning. In other words, let's find a way that they can lend money. They can, or I don't know what the word is. They're not exactly sinning, but let's create a legal loophole. So effectively, we can go against what it says in the Torah. The Torah says, don't get your money back. And they do get their money back. So, of course, it's legal. We did a legal fiction. That's exactly the job of the rabbi. It sounds, oh, my God. When you have two conflicting values, and not that we don't use our Shabbos timer to turn on the television set to watch the Yankee game, that's not a good reason. But in order that people will continue to lend money to give tzedakah, that is a good reason. So, therefore, we had a conflict. Unfortunately, people weren't following what it says in the Torah. So, no, what can we do? So let's work with them to find out a way. We can do that. So I don't know if I mentioned here. Tell me, did I mention this last week? Nobody remembers, so who cares? I can say it again, right? If I don't remember, how can I expect you to remember? I know I mentioned it. I gave a shiur in the afternoon. I know I mentioned it there, but maybe not here. I'll mention one other thing, and if I mention again, I'll mention again. So today the Tel Aviv light rail opened. So Netanyahu went yesterday, closed the ribbon, so they're all protesting because it's not running on Shabbos, you know, and that should run on Shabbos. So here's a simple solution. Who am I? I actually told this to the chief rabbi of Israel's, his son-in-law who's in Toronto now. He's teaching in Toronto, the Rabbi Lau, son-in-law teaching in Toronto. And I'm a little friendly with him. And I told him, go tell your father-in-law this. I don't imagine they'll do anything, but it's okay. Tell him anyways. I instruct you to tell your father-in-law this. What should they do? The chief rabbinate should announce the light rail will run on Shabbos. We're okay halachically. It's going to be free. We'll have to work with the politicians, going to be free, and we're going to have a non-Jew drive the light rail. A Shabbos elevator. So maybe, yes, maybe if everybody was Shomer Torah U'mitzvot, you wouldn't have a light rail. But, you know, Tel Aviv, most Jews are not so religious, and the whole country not Jews are religious. And they hate religion because we ram it down their throats, and they hate it. They're turned off from religion. I don't blame them. I hate to say it. So here's a perfect solution. It works halal. Yeah, that's, you know, how can they allow it? What do you mean? We allow a Shabbos elevator. Here you get a non-Jew, you make it free. And that to me is such, everybody compromises a little. So this is in my humble opinion. You can, anybody disagree with me, please let me know. But I think this is such a simple solution that would go so far for reducing the tension that we, unfortunately, Israel is being torn apart, as we all know. And this is such a simple way that really, believe me, it's much less problematic than Hillel's Prosbul. Hillel's Prosbul was much more radical, as is keeping chametz in our house. Everybody keeps chametz in their house. So you can tell me, I know we sell, you know, to people who smoke, they sell their lungs, you know, like, can do whatever you want. Yes, so of course it works halachic. That's the beauty of halacha, that halacha has a flexibility to it. When are you going to tell somebody to throw off $5,000 worth of food before Pesach? That's ridiculous. Bal tashkit. So we have a real problem here. So we come up with a creative solution, but it's pretty clear that the Torah doesn't want chametz in our house. Yeah, under the circumstances we keep. So it's not our house, but it is our, everybody knows. I think you all know what I mean. So that to me, allowing the light rail to run on Shabbos is much less of a halachic issue, and it would create much better gain. In other words, the payoff. But okay, what do they want? Maybe Jake Helman, he's some radical, crazy rabbi. Nobody cares what he has to say. Okay, but anyway, so that's Hayom. To me, that's Hashem Hayom Alavecha. The Torah has to be relevant. You want people to be religious. That's the problem. Do you care about what non-religious Jews are going to do? Many people don't. They tuck us say, you're not our community. We don't worry about you. That's really is a philosophy today. But obviously that's not my philosophy. Okay, let's get back to Shema. Nobody has to listen to my political, or my religious political, opinions. Okay. Parshat Shoftim is very dangerous, you know, but Parshat Shoftim, what's going on in Israel? Boy, oh boy. I'd imagine any rabbi, I don't know if all the rabbis are going to avoid it and talk about Egla Rufa or some other thing in the Parsha, or they're going to go straight in. You know, how do you appoint judges? Shoftim, Vishotrim, Titain Lecha. Oh my God, the Sanhedrin, the king, the melech, the relationship between the executive, judiciary. That's this week's Parsha. It's all about, that's on this week's Parsha. And the judiciary, by the way, in the Torah, it's clear the judiciary has the most power. That's for sure clear. More power than the executive branch. And okay, it's not for now. Okay. Vishinantan Levanacha Vidibartabam. Okay, let's get into something good stuff. Vishinantan, I hope it's all good. Vishinantan Levanacha. What does Vishinantan mean? By the way, I don't have my English sitter here. I wish I did. What does Vishinantan mean? How does it translate? You may have a sitter in front of them. I don't know
teach
why.
Teach them repeatedly.
Teach them. Vishinantan, Vishane.
Diligently.
I'm sorry?
Repeatedly.
Repeatedly. Vishinanta means to repeat. Lishanein. No, is that what it means? So again, it's one of these words that's not so clear. Lishanein is to sharpen, right? Here. And you shall teach them diligently, your children. Okay, Vishinanta, teach diligently. What does it mean to teach diligently? Let's take a look at what the Gemara says on Vishinantam Levanacha. This is tough Gemara. I mean, I don't know who can observe this exactly, but we'll try. Okay. Vishinantan Levanacha. That's one. Okay. I'll start with the easier one, which is actually very interesting. I guess the Sifri. Okay, fine. So I'll start with the Gemara. This is a Gemara in Kiddushin. So the Gemara says, my dichti vishinantam. What does it mean you shall teach? So altikra vishinantam. So this is always interesting. When the Gemara is altikri, don't read it. In other words, we're saying there's a second way to read it, or an additional level of interpretation. Do not read vishinantam, ela vishilashtam. So it's there. Is that what they're saying? Vishinantam means vishilashtam. And that's what the Gemara says. You should third it, vishilashtam. You should make it into thirds. Then the Gemara says, lo olam yishalesh adam dam shnotav. A person should divide his life into threes. Shlish b'mikra, the first, well, we'll see. One third of his life, he should learn mikra, Tanakh. One third of his life, he should learn Mishnah. Mishnah and shlish b'tamud, and one third b'tamud. Now, the Talmud didn't exist when the Talmud says this, but what it means, Talmud is analysis and Mishnah is pure halacha. Like, that's what it means. It doesn't mean the corpus, it doesn't mean what we call today the literature. I mean, a lot of the Mishnah is Mishnah. Mishnah just means this is what you do, this is what you don't do. You know, teach what you do. Talmud is analyzing why. So, you'd have to do a third of your life each one. So the Gemara says, well, how long are you going to live? I mean, you're going to live 120, so 40 years, 40 years, 40. I mean, who knows? So lo tzricha liyomei. So it means we're only talking about every day. That every day you should divide your why is it not coming up? Commentaries, I don't know why. Very interesting. You should divide your learning every day into Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud. Now, for some reason, which I don't know why, let me see maybe here. Okay. I don't know why, but anyways, Tosfot, I couldn't pull it up. So Tosfot on that question says, hold on a second, but we don't do that anymore. Do you know any yeshiva where they teach a third Tanakh, a third Mishnah, and a third Gemara? So this is actually a very fascinating discussion about our education. So Rabbeinu Tam came up with this idea that when you learn Talmud, when we learn Gemara by the Middle Ages, our Talmudic text, you get it all. When you learn Talmud, and it's called Talmud Bavli, because it's Balul Bakol, it's all mixed in together. It's a very, I don't know, it's hard. Exactly what is Rabbeinu Tam? I mean, is it true? I mean, Rabbeinu Tam said it. Like, so what's Rabbeinu Tam? Is he doing what? Is he justifying a practice that's not really ayayay? Or is he saying that somehow when you learn Talmud, you get everything? So let's say it's a second Peirusho. The one time in my life, I heard a shiur from the late Mordechai Breuer, the great expert in Tanakh, I think one of the founders of Herzog College, a great grandson of Shimshon Frau Hirsch, wrote the book Pirkei Mo'adot. So Mordechai Breuer taught for many years in Israel. I heard him once give a shiur when he was already an older man. I was in Israel in the 90s, and he spoke about how, you know, Gemara will quote a pasuk. The Gemara assumes you know the whole parak. In other words, you can learn, what do most people do when they learn Torah? The Gemara quotes, we don't pay attention. The Gemara quotes a pasuk. Some proof text, who looks up the text? Sometimes the proof text is in the part of the, that's not actually in the printing. They'll quote the first three words of the verse in the Talmud, but the proof is from the last four words of the verse. So people don't do that. So he was showing how there's so much meaning missing if you don't understand the parak in Tanakh when Chazal quote a pasuk. But whatever it is, that this idea that in theory vishinanta means it's very strange. Vishinanta doesn't mean you should teach diligently. I mean, it also means that, but what it means is it's how you teach. Vishinanta levenecha. It's not, and we know that's true. You can teach smart, or you can teach quantity and quality. We know that very often people, you know, it's like the Vilna Gaon's famous comment, for every measure, this was quoted by his student, Shklov, the Pat HaShulchan, the one who made Aliyah. I forget his first name. He has a book, Pat HaShulchan. He made Aliyah in the early 1800s about all the mitzvah living in Israel. So in his introduction, he quotes the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon, you know, the famous story that he learned mathematics in the bathroom, right? Everybody knows that. But University of Toronto has the book the Vilna Gaon wrote on mathematics. And I don't believe he wrote it in the bathroom. But okay, that's what they taught me when I was in yeshiva. But because you know what? Because I'll tell you why he didn't do it in the bathroom. A, he didn't do it in the bathroom. And B, because the Vilna Gaon probably considered it forbidden to learn math in the bathroom, because math is a subset of Torah. So it's, but leave that aside. But so there he quotes the Vilna Gaon as saying, whoever is missing, whatever you're missing in secular subjects, you're going to miss 10 times as much in Torah. If you don't understand science, you can't understand half the Gemara. If you don't understand the insides of an animal, you can't know Hilchot Kashrut. If you don't know how the astronomy, you can't know Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh. Look at the Rambam's Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh. You don't understand, physiology, biology, you can't paskin a shayla on medical ethics. You don't understand psychology, you can't paskin a shayla on social issues. You don't understand. I mean, you halacha is dependent on, you know, on chachma begoyim. And that was, so the Vilna Gaon said, whatever you're missing. So people often, they learn, how come it is often that people who have a broader education also know more Torah than people who only learn Torah. Again, I don't want to give a whole thing for Torah Mother, whatever, but I really do think it's true that when you learn other subjects, it broadens your mind, and therefore you're able to study Talmud on a much higher level. When you only study Torah, your Torah gets weakened, I think. And I think we see that. We see that today, that with all the people studying Torah, what they're producing. I don't mean to criticize, whatever. It's just, so there is something how you learn. So the Talmud interprets Vishinantel Venecha. You can't study Talmud if you don't know Tanakh. That's what the Talmud says. And the Mishnah says it from 5 to 10, you learn Tanakh. The Mishnah says it's slightly different, but it's also doing it in thirds, right? 5 to 10, you learn Tanakh. 10 to 15, you learn Mishnah. And at 15, you learn Talmud. Only 3 years, because you get married at 18. That's what the Mefarshim explained. Then you got to get married. You get married, you have to go to work. That's why the Mishnah goes 15, 5, 10, 15, 18, 20, 30. At 18, you stop learning, except the elite of the elite. They continue learning. So but if you don't have the Mikra and the Mishnah, your Talmud is going to be very weak. And we see it's very true. And I'm a victim of that too. My knowledge of Tanakh is not anywhere near what it should be. I'm a big believer in Mishnah, and I've spent a lot of time in recent years learning Mishnah. And that helped me a lot when I learned Gemara, because the Mishnah gives you the background. If you know Mishnah, you know everything. You know the introduction to everything. The Gemara is 100 times easier. You learn the Mishnah first. But we don't have to, Gemara doesn't even, there is no Gemara on half of the Mishnah. In other words, if you only learn Gemara, you miss half of the Mishnah. Half of Shas, you never learn. If you learn Daf, if you know every word in Daf Yomi up by heart, you don't get half the Masechta that don't have any Mishnah on them. That don't have any Gemara. So that's interesting. That's the first thing. That's what the Talmud interprets. Vishinanta levanecha is how do we teach our children? So this education. So you need a degree in education. To Baruch Hashem today, Torah Masorah is much more serious. There is an understanding even in the Haredi world, I think, my little knowledge, that there's a greater understanding. We need greater professionalism, and that requires secular knowledge. It's not really, really secular. Okay, that's one thing. Vishinantam, how do we learn Torah? How do we learn Torah effectively? And you have to build the foundation up. So you have to study Tanakh. And I mentioned many times, I think, Rabbi Yisro Meir Bloch, the Rosh Yeshiva, tells this famous letter. I mentioned that letter recently. You forget that too. Tova, you remember that letter? Oh, yeah, Meir Bloch was the Rosh Yeshiva of Telz in Cleveland. And so in 1956, they did a joint program for Yom HaTzmut with the Young Israel. And that was Elazar Muskin, who's been at Century City, built an amazing shul in California. His father was the rabbi in Cleveland, was the rabbi of the shul. And there was a joint program between the Telz Yeshiva and the Neshei Agudat Yisrael and the Mizrahi in 1956. And oh my God, the Aguda tells Yeshiva celebrating Yom HaTzmaut. So so it's all written up in Chakira a number of years ago. Elazar Muskin wrote out the whole thing. You can see the whole program. Rab Gifter was speaking. Rab Mordechai Gifter was already the Rosh Yeshiva, or one of the Rosh Yeshivas. So Elia Meir Bloch was heavily criticized. So he wrote a letter defending what he did. He said, listen, we don't agree with everything Israel does. I'm a religious Zionist. I don't agree with everything Israel does either, right? We don't agree with everything Israel does, but it's a wonderful thing. We have to celebrate. We have to give Hakar Satov. And then he mentioned the three mitzvot that Orthodox in the Yeshiva world, they neglected, which is a huge mistake. The three mitzvot they neglected are Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, okay, maybe not so much anymore, to live in Israel. Number two is to speak Hebrew. Interesting, calls that a mitzvah, to speak Hebrew. We don't focus on learning Hebrew. If you don't know Hebrew well, how do you know our sources well? If you have to learn Gemara from art scroll, it's not the same thing. And number three, the study of Tanakh. And it says, of course, the reason we don't do that is because all the Haskalah, that's what all the secular people did, the Haskalah, the Zionists. So knew if the Zionists are going to study Tanakh, Ben-Gurion study Tanakh. Right? If the Zionists are studying Tanakh, how can we study Tanakh? So he said that's a terrible thing. So just because the Zionists started the land of Israel doesn't mean we shouldn't celebrate what they have. So that's just a fascinating letter. And it's a big problem. Tanakh, it's true. When the Tanakh became the domain of the Haskalah, in the yeshiva world, they felt we don't study Tanakh anymore. But that's Baruch Hashem in Israel now. There's a tremendous revival of the study of Tanakh, but that hasn't hit North America. You don't have it in our schools. That what I see, it don't happen. But anyways, okay, that's the first thing, Vishinantam. And it's not just enough to learn Torah. You have to learn Torah properly, strategically, with great educational planning. Okay, let's do the second idea, the Sifri. So this is this is for, I don't know who this is for, but it's not for me. Let's just find the Sifri. Okay. Vishinantan levanecha. Well, you know what? I'm going to actually start with the Gemara in Yuma. Vishinantan levanecha. The Gemara says, does everybody see it here? Okay, Korea the Shema. We won't go through a background here. We're talking about Shema. Okay, look, fine. If it's talking about, can you speak in the middle of Shema? You know, the halakha is you can. And without getting all the details, somebody walks into shul, you're allowed to greet them. That's the famous halakha when you're saying Shema. Unlike in Shmon Esrei, v'dibartam bam, you could speak in Shema, but not during the Shmon Esrei. That's the context of the Gemara here a little bit. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan v'dibarta bam bam velo betzila. That's what I said. You can speak in the Shema, you're allowed to interrupt, but not in the Shmon Esrei. V'dibarta bam, bam yesh lecha reshut l'daver velo b'dvarim acherim. Wow. You have permission to speak about Torah, v'shinantan v'necha, but you don't have permission to speak about anything else. Don't go away yet. We're not finished. If you leave now, you'll miss the, right? But bam yesh lecha reshut l'daver. A Jew has permission to speak in Torah, v'lo b'dvarim acherim. Wow. Wow. So how in the world do we do that? That's impossible. That's what the Otzar Tfilot that I quoted earlier said. This is not human. No human can do that. What's the Gemara talking about? I'm not allowed to talk about anything else except Torah. So, okay, we can see. And then it seems to be contradicted, or at least a disagreement. Rav Ach Omer v'dibarta bam. Asei otam keva, v'al tasem arai. Make them your keva. This is like your permanent speech. Your main focus of talk should be on Torah. But don't make them, you know, once in a blue moon, like on Shabbos, I go to a shir. Most of your talk should be about Torah. And then the Gemara says, Rava Hasach Sichat, you know, Chulin. If you talk Narishkeit, Sichat Chulin, Chol, a secular, meaningless conversation, you're violating a negative commandment. Shenemar v'dibar tabam. And speak in Torah and not in Dvarim Acharim. So this is like, whoa. So we have to figure out what the Gemara means. So I, of course, when I was in high school, when Rav Tabori, Rav Binyamin Tabori, when I was in high school is when the Toronto Blue Jays started, 1977. That was the first year of the Blue Jays. So we were all excited. You know, Toronto was getting a baseball team. And and Rav Tabori happened to be a big baseball fan, and that's besides the point. So he would say, Jay, what do you do with the pasuk with the bartam vam below with varim betalim? You know, we would sit there instead of learning Gemara talking about Jerry Garvin started 77 and 5-0, and Dagal two home runs in the opening game. If those know what I'm talking about, you know, the Blue Jays of 77. I remember Rav Tabori. It's true. Their pitcher Jerry Garvin went 5-0 in April. That's like amazing. He said, "Don't worry. By the end of the year, he'll be nothing. Like there's no way this is going to continue all year." But so Jay, what do you do with the pasuk? So the question is, what exactly does that mean? So it's very hard. So I think why don't we start with Eleanor Roosevelt, right? The famous, I think it's Eleanor Roosevelt. I looked it up. Where do I have? Did I bring the exact quote? I thought, yes. Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people, right? So it means, of course, what we talk about says a lot about what we do, about who we are. So the idea that we should talk about Torah is a very beautiful idea. And that's the highest thing. So yes, great ideas. Torah. Now, the simple explanation of the Gemara, and that's really what the Yotzer Tfilot says, exactly how you want to define it in modern terms, you know, everybody will define slightly different, but conceptually, I think everybody agrees. What he says is when we say to speak, doesn't mean to talk. It doesn't mean you can't speak about other things. That's impossible. First of all, it's not realistic. As he puts, lo nitna Torah lemalachei hasharet. Torah wasn't given to angels. It was given to human beings. Human beings need outlets. They need other things in life. They were normal. You have to go to a ball game once in a while. You have to talk about other things once in a while. And B, it's not even true at all. Even in an ideal world, it's not just we need an outlet. It's important to talk about other things. He says it's important to talk about business, work. All there are other things in life that are important to us. So he says, no, you have to understand. But the part of I think it's obvious, but it's important to point out that the Barta Bam has two meanings. One is what you mamish talk about, and one is how you your actions, the way we act speaks about who we are. We all know that. I don't have to speech. Actions speak louder than words. That's what the Barta Bam means. Actions speak louder than words. So all your actions, all of your actions have to be in Torah. Yeah, you can be as Rav Tabori would tell us, right? The way you play baseball can be a kiddush Hashem, and sports can teach you. I'm not talking about watching NFL for 9 hours on Sunday, but you know how we interact with people in competition. All these things are good. Everything in life, you can know God in every path of life. So that's what he explains. When the Mishnah says, when the Gemara says, "V'dibar tavam." Below, we can't talk about anything else. That means everything we do in life, how we drive our car. Do we let somebody in? You know, do we cut somebody off? What do you do in the shopping? You know, we're shopping and, you know, all these things. Do we greet people when we're walking in the street? You know, all these things. That's the Barta Bam, keeping Torah. Then there's a second mitzvah. Yes, you should speak about Torah a lot. Those who know, you should speak about ideas. Ideas is also Torah, so it depends. You can broaden it. May the Vilna Gaon say mathematics is also Torah, right? That's what obviously Rav Soloveitchik believed. All the people in my world, in our world, I assume most people here are on the, you know, the belief that it's not exact. I remember Rav Tabori telling us, you know, we believe that math and science and even history and Rav Lichtenstein, he would tell you, even English literature, it's also Torah, right? The study of literature helped him is an understanding of Tanakh. Rav Lichtenstein wrote about that very often. When you study literature, you can appreciate Tanakh much more. And that the style today in Israel is a much more literary style. The new approach to Tanakh is very literary analysis. So you have to study modern literature. So everything can be Torah. Everything can be used to it. But the idea that everything we do, v'shinantan levanecha v'dibarta bam, we should teach our children smartly, in a proper sequence. Don't start with, you know, calculus. If you got to do geometry before, I don't know, you got to do functions before you do calculus. And don't start with organic chemistry, basic science, and move into chemistry. Then go to organic chemistry, right? You have to teach smart, Tanakh, Mishnah, Talmud. And you have to make sure that everything you do is an extension of Torah. That's what the Barta Bam, below Bedvarim, Betelim, and not to talk in other things. So, okay. All right. I think that's, these are, I think to me, these are pretty obvious things, but important to point out. That's what the Torah is telling us. Now, Vishinantan Levanecha. Then the Gemara, the Sifri has another comment that I'll just show relating to this. So this is really, really more for Talmidei Chachamim, I would say. What does the Sifre say? Let me just find it. V'shinanta levanecha. Shim misudarim l'toch picha. V'shinanta means should be ordered, orderly. It's kind of a little bit like 3, 3, and 3, but orderly. K'shadam shoel chad davar, al tikan gembo. When somebody asks you a question, don't stammer. Ela mor lo miyad. So v'shinanta levanecha here means, again, it's quality of learning. A person should know Torah like that. When you ask it, so this is, I don't know what to do with this because I don't think we practice, like Rav Soloveitchik used to complain that in America, people call up the rabbi, complicated question. My grandmother was married by a conservative rabbi and then she got divorced, but she doesn't have a get and she remarried and this and then, and then the, what are you going to do? So this is a complicated question. Can you say and they expect the rabbi on the phone to give an answer. Says, you can't, you have to think about it. But I guess it means, I don't think that's a contradiction. The Rav complained that in Europe, when they asked Rav Chaim Moser a question, he would take a week or two to answer. He would look at all from all angles. In America, the questions are 50 times more complicated and the rabbis are less knowledgeable and they think the rabbi on the phone can answer the question. The rabbi doesn't know. I mean, he'll get back to me, but you have to take your time. But it means you shouldn't when somebody asks you a thing, I don't know exactly what this sifri means, but because don't stammer, amar lo miyat, tell him immediately. So I don't think that means a psak halacha, and I don't think we're contradicting. That means a Torah should be very fluent. You should be very fluent. So that I find this very fascinating. V'cheinu omer, what's the proof text? Amar lechachma achoti at. So a pasuk in Mishlei. U'modal lebinati gra. Say to wisdom is my sister. So the Torah is compared to your sister. I don't know. That's we'll go back to baseball, right? Everybody knows what happens if you split a doubleheader.
No, no.
Not enough. Do we have any baseball here? Okay. That the old expression, you split a doubleheader, like they don't play doubleheaders anymore because they can't take two attendances. Like it used to be doubleheaders all the time. Let's play two. But, today when they play a doubleheader, they play one at 1 o'clock and one at 8 o'clock so they can get attendance twice. What can we do? It's all about money. But, what they say when you split a doubleheader, it's like kissing your sister. In other words, you know, what's the point? You won one, you lost one. Like you wasted the whole day. You did nothing. You played two baseball games and you're where you started. It's like kissing your student. No one ever heard that expression. Okay. I don't know. Anyways. Okay. So what's the Sifrei saying that when I should study Torah, should be like my sister. And more lechachma achoti at, say to wisdom. So the commentary is vain, just like you're very close to your sister, you love your sister, whatever Torah should be close. So I was thinking about that. I don't have a great idea. So I'm just throwing it out if anybody asks, but that's how they seem to say your sister is somebody you're very close to. But if you look in the Chumash, I just found this fascinating. I don't know if it's relevant. I think it is relevant. That's why I'm saying it. In Parshat Emor, when the Torah tells us who a Kohen is allowed to, I didn't bring the Pasuk up, did I? Yeah, I did. Who a Kohen can become impure for. So his seven relatives. Emor HaKohanim, so he can't become, a Kohen can't go to a funeral unless it's an immediate relative. It says, Sheiro Karov Lav Limo Laviv Livno Libito Lachiv, his mother's father, his Rachman Lisman, his son or daughter, or to his brother. Then the Torah has its own pasuk. Ulachoto Abdullah HaKrovayla. And his sister, who's a virgin, who's close to him. So I don't know. Somehow the Torah wants to emphasize the closeness of a person to their sister more than I think to their parents. I don't know exactly what that means, but that's what the Torah is emphasizing. And of course, once the sister gets married, you lose that closeness to the sister. So somehow what the Netziv is here is you have to take care of your sister. We're talking about if the father died, the sister's an orphan. So you have to be extra careful with the sister. I don't know exactly what it means, but it's just, I find it interesting that the Mishnah says that you should know Torah, but Shinatul Venech means you should be fluent in Torah, just like you say to your sister, you know, Amor Lechachmachotiyat, like you have to know Torah like you know your sister. Like it means you grew up together, you know, the foibles and the strengths and the weaknesses of, you know, when you grow up with somebody, you know things that nobody else knows about them. Even a spouse doesn't know, right? Generally, you know, the spouse only meets the person at a later age. They don't know the person, even if they hear, but they don't know what the person was truly like growing up. Well, that's only a brother or sister who knows that. So maybe that's what I'm saying. I don't know, but it's just interesting. That's how this is phrased. So we have basically three explanations, right? Quality, how we learn, the style of learning, what we should focus on in general, that all our life should be focused on Torah. And then the idea that you should be fluent in Torah, which they all sort of all go together. They form a unit, but that's the mitzvah, v'shinantam levanecha. Now, who are our banecha? We did v'dibarta bam, but we skipped levanecha. We did v'shinantam and v'dibarta bam. What does levanecha mean? It's not a hard question. Everybody knows what it means. Levanecha, what does it mean?
The children.
Amidah.
Your children. So we have two, right. So interesting. We'll get to this, not for now, but that will, does Levanecha mean your sons or your children? Does Bnei Yisrael mean your son or your children? So I don't want to do that now. We will do that when we get to the second paragraph of the Shema. V'limata tama tama b'nechem. The Gemara doesn't say anything here, levanecha, but it says v'limata on the b'nechem. We'll leave that for now, but that's interesting. Let's assume it's your children for our purposes. You have to teach Torah, at least in the broadness of Torah, to your children. So, of course, I think I heard people say it also means our students. The v'nechem also means our students, but it's important to know that again is a drasha. That is like a secondary level of interpretation. The main idea of the verse is to teach your children the greatest mitzvah. When we hire a teacher, let's say your parent is teaching indirectly, but the mitzvah is to teach, we know that's to teach the child, but the Rambam, right, the Gemara says, but most parents are not capable of teaching, so we hire a teacher. So I remember Rav Schachter telling us that that's great. And when you hire a teacher, you know, there's a halacha, I don't know if they all teach it like this. There's a Mishnah in Bava Metzia. The Mishnah says like this: Avedat Avi Vavedat Rabbo. If let's say your father and your teacher, your Rebbe, lost an object. And one of them lost it in the Mediterranean and one lost in the Jordan. So you can only, can't go to both places. You have to pick. Who are you going to look for? You're going to help your teacher find the lost object, or are you going to help your father find the lost object? So the mission rules, you have to help your somebody. You have a 50-50 chance.
Rebbe.
Who do you help first? Sorry?
Rebbe.
I'm sorry?
Your Rebbe.
Your Rebbe. Good. How come?
Because it's the Gemara.
Sha'avi mevio la'olam hazeh. His father brings him to this world. The Rebbe shalamdo Torah. His Rebbe who teaches him Torah mevio la'olam haba. And apparently olam haba is more important, greater than olam hazeh. So you have to teach your Rebbe. Because it's true, your parents are your biological. Biological is important. But spiritual, your spiritual parent, your Rebbe, in a sense, is more important than your biological parents. So the poskim point out, so I this day all the rabbim teach in yeshiva, you know, but they don't teach out is what the poskim point out. That's only if the rebbe teaches for free. If the father pays $30,000, I had a friend over last night. He tells me his niece is in Heschel in Manhattan. Tuition at Heschel in Manhattan, $52,000 a year. $52,000 a year. Says his niece, his sister doesn't pay it, but they give out generous subsidies, but there are parents who pay $52,000 a year. Wow. So for, I think Ramaz is $43,000 a year. It's also wow. I don't know what SAR is. I mean, it's nuts. Toronto chat, Baruch Hashem, is only 22.5, Canadian, but okay, that's a whole other story. So when you pay tuition, the father is the teacher of the child, not the Rebbe. And everybody would agree that you have to help the father first, because he is your teacher. The enabler, right? We all know an enabler is more important than one who does what done. The person who pays for something, we say the one who supports Torah gets more reward than the one who learns Torah. Without money, imen kamach ein Torah. So that's a beautiful idea. Really, when the father or the mother, whatever, they don't know how to teach. They're not they're lawyers, they're doctors. They don't have the time, the ability, the knowledge to teach their children. They send them to school, Baruch Hashem. But the parent is the real teacher. That's Vishinantel Venecha. But Rav Schachter said, since we have a principle of Shlucho Shel Adam Kemoto, that a person should always do something themselves rather than do a messenger. You should learn. I mean, anyways, it's a nice idea. Learn with all your kids an hour a week, whatever. Learn with them a little bit. So you're partially involved in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. But Vishinantel Venecha is a beautiful idea, really, that we should teach our children. We, you know, we say it all the time, but just the thing about it, it's a tremendous zechut to be able to teach a child. Maybe we'll pick up next week. It's a tremendous zechut to teach a grandchild. The Torah Vodato Nevanecha Ulubnei Vanecha. That's maybe even greater. But that's Vishinanta Nevanecha. Our students are like our children. It also says about the relationship one must have with a student. If your student is like your child, Vishinanta Nevanecha, wow. So the relationship between a teacher and the care that a teacher has to love his students like he loves his children. Obviously, that can't be literally true. Just like Vahapta L'Reacha kamocha is not literally true. But on a conceptual level, on a certain level, we have to treat our children, our students, like we treat our children. Okay, I see it's already 10:30. Let's just do a quick review and then I can take any question. Basically, we started off the share with a little bit of a quote-unquote a downer. Maybe the mitzvah to love God is only talking about negative commandments and that you have to love God with all our money. The Modecha, it's true, halakhdi, you don't have to love God with all your money to do a positive mitzvah, only a negative mitzvah. You know, for all the money in the world, you can't violate the laws of Shabbat, unless your life is in danger. Even though you can make three times as much money working for some firm, that was a big problem 50 years ago. Jews couldn't get jobs if they didn't work on Saturday, right? You couldn't get jobs in top law firms if you didn't work on Saturday. Forget all the in the retail. But what can you do? You have to give up a lot. But when it comes to a positive mitzvah, we don't give up a lot. We're not allowed to spend more than 20% on our on a mitzvah. And then we discussed the idea that a positive mitzvah, even though we have to be more careful with the negative mitzvah because that's doing something wrong, still a positive mitzvah is more reflective of the love of God and is greater. And therefore, a positive mitzvah overrules a negative mitzvah when they come in conflict. And therefore, your talis can be made of shatnes, wool and linen together, if that's the only way to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. And we said that's only in our relationship between man and God. God is okay with us to violate the Torah, do a mitzvah, but not, God forbid, in our relationship with other human beings. I can't steal a lulav. I'm so frum, I don't have a lulav. Of course, mitzvah to say, docha lo taseh. The mitzvah to keep a lulav overrides the negative mitzvah, not to, that's ridiculous. When it comes to human interaction, God, the same way God can't forgive our sins against another human being, can only forgive sins against him, so him or her, whatever. So too, no, the Shekhinah does have a feminine sense, but we're not going to go there, not a female idea. So too, when it comes to mitzvah between man and man, then mitzvah hababa avera is the key, not asei docha lo taseh. Then we gave the idea of v'shinantan levanecha. What does exactly that mean? The quality of learning, how we learn, the importance of what we learn. It's really, really important. If you learn properly, you can accomplish much more in less time. And properly in our traditional canon of literature means Tanakh, Halacha, Mishnah, but it means the basics of what to do. And then analysis. When you're 15 years old, but let's start with the basics. If you don't know Mishnah well, you can't really know Gemara well. And if you don't know Tanakh well, you can't even know Gemara well. Then you have to understand, how does the Chazal use the Pesukim? That's what we're quoting Sifri last week and this week. The Sifri is a halachic way to read a verse. And that transitions into the Mishnah, into the Gemara. And then, of course, yeah, that should be our focus. We should speak only in Torah. So here we said Torah doesn't mean what we speak only in Torah. That's impossible. And it's not even desirable, but rather means our actions speak louder than words. Everything we do should speak Torah. We can make a Kiddush Hashem by how we drive our car, you know, whatever, you know, anything we do is a way. There's an ethical way to do everything. So that's nothing else. Everything we do, through sports, through everything, you can come to a recognition of God. Of course, much of it should be through classical Torah. Much you can be great people, talk about ideas. That's and we said Torah can be very broad. Mathematics is also part of Torah. It's not exactly the same kind of like v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. It doesn't literally mean you should love your neighbor yourself, but it's in the same ballpark. So too, mathematics, it's God's world, God's science, God created the world. You're studying God. That's also a subset of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And then we discuss v'shinantan levanecha, teach your children. That's beautiful, to have a relationship between a parent and a child. And the teacher is just an extension of the parent, which means it in two ways. The teacher has to have the love for the child, but also mean the teacher is really just fulfilling what the parent does. The parent is paying for it. So the parent really gets much more reward than what the teacher should get. If you teach for free, then that's a whole different story. Okay, let me just take a look. Any questions here? That's one of the possible reasons why Shatnes is Aser, belongs to the Kohen Gadol only. A common you want to say in general, Shatnes is Aser. No, that's interesting. I never heard that. That's an interesting idea. The Tchelet, see, it's on the other hand, everybody wears Tchelet because everybody's like a king. Maybe not everybody's like a Kohen Gadol. That's very interesting to think about that. Everybody's like a priest because the Tchelet was the Begadim Well, it was worn by priests, Tchelet, and by kings, right? That's why everybody wears Tchelet. We're a nation of royalty. So that's interesting. But here you're saying the opposite.
I think it's in Rashi.
Oh, Rashi says that, really?
I think it's Rashi. I know. I taught it's one of the commentaries.
It could be.
Shavit HaMelech, just like a commoner can't use the king's scepter, that we don't use the something that belongs only to the Kohen Gadol.
And Shatnez, you're saying, is the realm of the Kohen Gadol.
That's according to that commentary. I think.
Yeah, I'd like to see if it's in Rashi. Okay, if you come across it, thank you. Let me know. Yes, I'll need to give a little compromise. Some people think compromise is a dirty word. Compromise is a very good word. And by our judicial system, the Sanhedrin, the Masechet Sanhedrin, they should say we do a pshara. Pshara is when we, instead of going to court, you're like what we might call arbitration. It means they compromise. We're in a court. If you win 51%, you get 100% of the money, right? It's a zero-sum game. In a pshara, you can say you're right, but they're extenuating circumstances, so you'll get only 60% of the money. So that's a pshara. What does pshara mean in Hebrew? Mind pushing, it's lukewarm. Nobody's really happy with it. It's not cool, not there, right? Everybody has to give a little bit. Okay, thank you. A Greek political religious commentary. Okay, yeah. Okay, fine. I will try. Creative solution. I guess people like my idea of the railroad. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, next week I think we'll continue on the Seder. That's what I sort of decided, unless you outvote me. And then I think in 2 weeks we'll spend a few weeks on the Machzor, if that's okay with everybody. Always willing to hear, want to hear what you have to say. Otherwise, wish everybody Shabbat Shalom and Chodesh Tov and Shana Tova and all good things. And of course, Sunday morning, we start the official Elul series, Rabbi Leithag, a month of holidays, Tishrei. Please note, it is a different login, of course. As we start a new month, the login changes. You should have all registered by now, if you can register. But this login will not work beginning next week, including my class also next week will be on the new login. All the classes will be on the new login. Of course, I don't know what it is, but it's in the email. You register for any of the classes, you'll get that. So just keep that in mind beginning Sunday with the change over to Rabbi Leithag. And then we have, I think, 9 classes next week. We're going to, ramp up the learning as we get closer to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Okay, everybody, be well. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very much.
Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Hi, how are you doing? How are things in Hamilton?
Oh, good, fine. Thank you.
Okay, good.
I'm still in Sholem Village, but I'm improving, I think.
Yes. Oh, okay. Okay, good to hear. But that's in Hamilton, no?
Yes, it's a really good place. The service, the quality, they do a great job here.
Okay, great. Okay, be well.
Rabbi Kelman?
Yes?
It's Judy Sokolow. Do you have 2 or 3 minutes or not?
Sure.
Okay, so
you're like my children. If I have time for my children, I have to have time for my students after this year. Okay. Yes. Okay.
And I am very happy to be one of those. That's
Thank
nice.
You.
Anyway.
Thank
you. So 2 weeks ago, it was very funny because both being a presser and I suggested that the word lave does not mean hard. It means sefer. It means intellect. And
when
I laughed, I said we both must have learned that in the same place, which we did, which is my husband Sharon Shabbos. Okay. So the deal is that traditionally that's what it meant.
Right.
And heart came to be a metaphor for Seichel. Heart then became the metaphor for that. But to say that Shema is devoid of mentioning Seichel and all of these things that we're supposed to do doesn't really make
right.
Vishinatan
Levanecha is for sure talking about intellect.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. But the whole thing is you know,
I understand what you're saying, right? I alluded to it today. I said, right, so traditionally the heart was also seen as connected to the intellect. I just, unfortunately, I'm very not knowledgeable in this whole area. This is a much more, I don't call it a mystical area. This, it's not something I just know enough about. But yes, I am aware that the heart was considered part of the intellect, not just the emotion. But I think it was also emotion in Torah. When Torah says,
right.
I think that that's not talking about the intellect. I don't think it could be, you know, people get intellectually drawn away from Judaism. But below Torah, Einechem is a much more emotion. You see something and you lust after it.
Correct.
That's the, yeah. You know.
Correct. Okay. Now we all know that, you know, we all know, you know, right? Along that right. line of thinking. We all know today that physiologically it all goes on in the brain. The emotional okay. goes on in the brain.
I understand.
The,
okay.
You know.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. When you study science, science becomes part of
yes, and I was that's
a
exactly
great example.
Right. Say that
this
all
shows
the time.
You. Right. A lot of things we begin to we study as we learn more. Ah. Now something became dumb for 3,000 years. I didn't understand this. And now all of a sudden we have a new understanding of something 3,000 years later. Okay. Anyways. Yeah. Okay. Thank
yes,
you.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank
okay.
you. Rosalind was here. She just left. I just see she put a question. Was it racist to prevent a Jew from driving the light rail? No.
Is it racist to prevent a Jew from joining what?
Riding on the light rail, my solution, a non-Jew drive the light rail. She thought, but the Jew wants to drive it. Okay. All right. Listen, I think everybody has to come.
It's
not going to happen, but to me,
you
it's
know, you live in a building
solution.
Like mine in Manhattan where you have all these people, you know, and every once in a while, if you have a Shabbos problem, I have someone standing outside my door who can take care of it for me. And I wonder what they think. And sometimes I ask them what they think. And they're respectful, you know. They know that different people live different ways.
People, of course.
As long as we're very
you respect
nice
your religion. You're in a normal society, people respect their religion. But when people fight about religion, then they don't. It's interesting, you know. I don't want to get into it now at great length, but there's a whole debate like non-Jews in the land of Israel. So Rav Gorin was of the opinion that we have to create a halachic state that everything can run according by Jews. When the Torah says create a state of Israel. So the idea that every aspect of a state, a modern state. So in which case you have to be very creative in solutions. You have to be able to run a state totally on Jews, medicine. You can't rely on the goyim. And other people actually disagreed and said, that's why we have goyim living in Israel. So we can, because there's certain things that Jew can't do. I think Rav Gorin's approach is better in a sense, but it's easier. The second approach, yeah, we have non-Jews. We can rely on the non-Jew to do that. I mean, you can't have this discussion in public because that does sound sort of a little almost racist. But
the problem is if you don't have a non-Jew doing it, then a Jew will do it, which isn't.
Right. Obviously, a Jew can work in the hospital on Shabbos. I mean,
tell me about that.
Oh, but, yeah. Tell you something fascinating, and I was blown away, Rav. Yosef Carmel, you know who that is? He runs the Kollel Eretz Chemda, which is a great kollel.
No, I don't know.
Very serious kollel for Dayanot, basically for Hesder graduates. It's very serious learning. They put out this Shelet and Shuvat Mareh HaBazak, fascinating stuff. Anyways, so he's the Rosh Kollel. Like he's, you know, religious Zionist, modern Orthodox, whatever term you want to use. So many years ago, he spoke in Toronto. And he said that when his mother died on Shabbos afternoon, he called the police, the coroner, because the law in Israel is if somebody dies in the house, the coroner has to come or whatever. They have to come and investigate. And he said he called on Shabbos. So I went on. I said, wow, like it's not pikuach nefesh anymore. The person's not alive. He said we have to have a different definition of pikuach nefesh in Israel. That when you have a national state and you can't have the country and the government passes a law for all kinds of reasons, foul play, who knows what, that you have to call report a death right away. That's part of the national pikuach nefesh, and that is docha Shabbos. So I found that to be wow. Like no Haredi posek would say something like that. But I found that fascinating.
I'm
not agreeing or disagreeing. I just, you know, I totally hear that, right? That's what I'm saying. Now we have a state of Israel. The halachic approaches have to be broader, have to different. Unless you think you're living in Europe, in the shtetl in Poland, I don't care about the rest of the country, and you're going to live where you live. And when the Mashiach comes, you'll do it. But if you believe that,
good for you.
And good
for us. Who said this? My husband is standing here, and I didn't pick up.
Oh, Rav Yosef Carmel. Did your husband know he is from Eretz Chem?
Rav Yosef Carmel. He runs. Yeah, he says yes.
He's a big kamachacha.
Had that here with a Hatzalah instance where somebody died and the doctor did not know how to do an electronic death thing. It was on Friday night, right? And they had to call the authorities. That's what you do.
That's right. So how do you, it's all these questions, right? That's the same question on the light rail, what I was talking about. If you only care about your narrative.
That was very smart. I like that.
You know,
very
but
much.
If you take a broad view that we're living in a state of Israel, religious, non-religious, and we have to have halachic approaches that work for the non-religious, then you run the light rail on Shabbos. Yeah, you make it free, which is nice. Everybody would appreciate that. And you have non-Jews driving. Well, it's no different than a Shabbos elevator.
Shabbos elevator, right.
You know, so.
Good. Thank you.
Shabbat shalom. Chodesh tov.
Shabbat shalom to you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah.